All right. Well, welcome, everybody. This is John Patika Jr. over in the Patika Wealth Management Group down in Clearwater. And I'm also accompanied here with John Patika Sr., who's our Senior Portfolio Manager, and as you know, my father. And our special guest today is Anthony Liotti. He's the head of our Fixed Income Separately Managed Account Group. And he's a veteran in the fixed income business, over 30 years in the business. And prior to joining UBS, Anthony worked over at Goldman Sachs as a municipal bond portfolio manager. So, Anthony, welcome to our call today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Good morning, everyone.
Anthony, could you talk a little bit about your team at UBS?
I'd love to get into a little bit about, you know, if you don't mind, I'll also talk a little bit about a very brief history, if you will, on UBS Asset Management. My team currently sits in between all of our portfolio managers, traders, as well as our credit team for all of our taxable fixed income SMA solutions, as well as our municipal bond tax-free SMA solutions. And really what my team is here for is a lot of support to our financial advisors. We're kind of really viewed as an extension of the financial advisor team and their clients to be, you know, provide advice and counsel on the markets, talk about the available solutions that we have in the market, really provide them with insight and guidance as to what we see happening in the market, and then appropriately provide them with that advice and counsel to what solution we have either on our platform or, you know, from an open architecture standpoint, what other providers, quite frankly, might be able to provide them to properly assist them with their investment solutions. And so a little history on, again, I'll make it quick, history on UBS Asset Management. You know, I'll say historically, it's got a very interesting background. It, for the most part, up until about the last 7 years, UBS Asset Management as a global asset manager really had much of its focus on institutional solutions. And with the exception of the municipal bond department, which had really been around for about to 3 decades closely. And it really wasn't up until 2018, John, where UBS made a really concerted effort to build up the separately managed account business. And for those who might not be sort of familiar with the term a separately managed account, really what that means is the ability for a client and investor to have a specific portfolio of either equity securities or fixed income securities built out for them purposely and only for them. So it's not a commingled fund. It's not a mutual fund. It's not an ETF. A separately managed account is where you literally see all the individual holdings, whether it's on the equity side or the fixed income side, in your account. That has been a real growing business for UBS Asset Management. When you look at the entire space, you know, UBS right now, over that brief, I'll say brief period, it's about 5 to 6 years that we've been in the SMA space, John, we're now a top 5 provider within the United States within the separately managed account business. And so it's been great, I think, for both UBS as well as, you know, more benefit is to our clients. You know, when you look at across the platform, it's not just in the fixed income space, which we're talking about today, but also in equities. There's about, you know, close to $60 billion in equity SMAs. Within our fixed income space, we have about $40 billion split fairly evenly between municipals and taxables, munis, a little bit more of, I'd say, the 60-40 split, if you will. And then the multi-asset program is also very large on the SMA side, about $33 billion. And so it's a pretty diverse platform. You know, we've got fixed income, roughly 20 different fixed income separately managed accounts split evenly between both our taxable SMAs as well as our municipal SMAs. On the taxable side, what you're looking at is, again, a very diverse platform. You've got everything from treasury portfolios that provide very high degree of liquidity for that liquidity bucket for our clients, all the way out to emerging market debt, which is a very interesting asset class within taxable fixed income that doesn't get as much attention as it probably should, to be quite frank, especially here in the States. And then when you look at the muni platform, also very diverse, everything from an ultra short where you take very little maturity risk all the way out to a what we call a yield focus, which is going to provide clients with really, you know, those who are looking to lock in yields on the back end, you know, longest maturities that are available within the municipal asset class as well, right? You know, one thing I'd add too, John, the one interesting thing about UBS Asset Management that I think differentiates us is all the solutions that I just mentioned, whether it be on the equity side, even the fixed income side, we only offer these solutions to UBS clients. And I think when you look at other managers within the space where clients have options, having, you know, our ability to only offer clients, you know, our solutions is, you know, it's a greater access to the product, right? You know, that you're not in competition when you're another, let's say, broad-based manager out there in a platform, getting the bonds that are really the best bond in the marketplace. You know, our clients are always at the top of the list to get those securities. And I think that is something that I wanted to mention because it is a main differentiator for our platform here.
Thanks, Anthony. I'll just comment on the need for the separately managed accounts. There was no need when I first started. We'd buy 8% tax-free bonds that were insured. So you had AAA. Yeah. There wasn't a whole lot of discussion about maturity risk or, you know, go 30 years. Who cares? You got 8% tax-free. And you had the insurance. Well, that all has changed. The rates have been so dramatically changed, and there's been so much risk. And it only makes sense to buy on a massive scale. And that's why we use you guys. And that's why I brought you in today, because you guys do this 24/7. And it's very difficult to buy smaller blocks of bonds. You guys buy them in the millions. So.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I mean, you know, you mentioned I've been doing this probably way too long. But yeah, I started, you know, on the desk of building individual bond portfolios. And you're right, John. I mean, up until the financial crisis, you know, when you look at munis specifically, 70% of the market had that wrap of municipal bond insurance, right? And so clients never really needed to or really had to, you can make an argument, to look at what the underlying rating was, because we were protected with this great umbrella, this insurance policy, if the underlying insurer were to default. It's quite right, because the insurance company would pick up principal and interest payments. When that went away, because those insurance companies, many of them are no longer in business, the focus on credit became first and foremost. And in the markets where things in this world and, you know, domestically in the United States, you know, we're dealing with significantly different issues than we were 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago as it relates to credit. What I think is the most important thing, and why I shifted over from my wealth management side into asset management a number of years ago, was the growth and the importance part of having someone regularly and constantly evaluating what's going on in the market. Not just finding the right bond, but finding the right bond at the right price and ensuring what you're putting into your portfolio from a credit perspective. You can no longer just look at the Moody's and S&P ratings and assume that that will be that way for the foreseeable future, right? Because you could be buying that bond and it could show a double A credit, but without truly knowing what's happening behind the scenes, that credit could be downgraded in 2 weeks, right? That's what you want to avoid in these particular markets here. Yes, the mini market in particular, even the corporate market, we'll get into credit probably in a little bit, but it's ever changing and it's changing more quickly than we've ever witnessed in our past.
Yeah, and actually, that's a pretty good segue. Could you talk about last year and give us a little bit of a backdrop? I mean, that was a very difficult year in fixed income.
It was probably one of the worst years of my career. And I think the line would be, you know, very deep of those individuals, whether it be, you know, equity portfolio managers or fixed income portfolio managers. And no matter where you look across any of the asset classes, but even fixed income, there really was no place to hide. Whether even if you had a very, very short-term portfolio, which is typically a place in which bond investors would be able to withstand the storm. Even that part of maturities or the curve, if you will, the yield curve was impacted. The market, really what happened was, when you go back into the early parts of 2022, we don't want to point the finger, right? Not necessarily a nice thing to do, but really it was the problem with the Fed. There was a complete misinterpretation of what the Fed had expected, or what the Fed was really looking at from their data, saying that inflation was transitory. And we heard that word and that term transitory used often by the Fed and by the popular press. And what we really, and the Fed clearly realized in the early months of 2022, that there was a problem and that inflation was not in fact transitory, and that we needed to address this at the Fed level fairly swiftly and significantly. And so with that, when you start out with the transitory term and the expectation going into the year is that the Fed was only going to potentially increase rates by 75 basis points. We saw one of the swiftest moves and strongest moves by the Fed in history. And we ended the year significantly higher to where we were roughly 400 basis points higher in Fed funds than when we started, right? Again, a historical move by the Fed. And even as we pass and turn the calendar into 2023, we're kind of still dealing with this inflation as a very topical point and issue within the marketplace, because the goalpost, the problem with 22 was, John, is that the goalpost kept moving, right? And that, you know, when you look at where the futures market was throughout 2022, the expectations were that maybe, you know, in mid-year 2022, that the Fed would only get as high as 2.5% to maybe 3%. That kept changing. And still today, as we began the year in 23, the expectation was that, well, we would be cutting in maybe mid-2023. And here we are, not even done with the first quarter. And that, depending upon who you talk to, in my opinion, is probably off the table from cutting rates, because this inflation is very, very sticky. The economy has clearly not reacted to what the Fed has done in what the Fed had expected the economy to do, which was significant slowdown in employment, significant purchasing power from individuals within the country, that they would significantly pull back from them spending. And neither of that has really happened, right? And so the fight continues. And I'd say that, you know, what you can anticipate in the market here is this, is I kind of look at this as a bit of a journey. And that on this journey, the market and the Fed will be lockstep and barrel on their walk. And other times they will break apart and try to see if there's a different path to us getting down to the 2% target of inflation. And clearly, when we turned the calendar into 23, John, the market had really taken that different approach than the Fed. The market, which was a little bit of the antithesis to what we saw last year, which was the market was saying, we're good, we're in a good place. We should be landing this economy in a fairly good order, and inflation will continue to drift down to the Fed's target of 2%. And over the past month of February, every economic data that came out clearly showed that this market had a lot of steam to it and a lot of purchasing power, and employment was still, the non-farm payrolls was a complete blowout, and that the Fed now and the market has adjusted to the fact that we're not going to land this really from an inflationary standpoint to that 2% target anytime soon. So the expectation here right now is that rates will continue to remain high, elevated, at least on the front end, until we get greater clarity in 2023 as to the direction of the economy here.
So here we are, and the yield curve is steep and inverted, media making a big fuss over that. What do we do with our yields, our maturities, that kind of thing? Just touch, you know, if I got new money today, what do I do? Where am I at?
Yeah, a question we address multiple times throughout the day and the week, for sure. One of the benefits of this, right, is if we look back a year ago, John, the conversations that I were, you know, and my team were having with financial advisors and clients were this: where can I get the lowest amount of maturity or duration risk to get a yield of 1%? And the answer to that was, well, we'd have to combine some treasuries, maybe some corporate bonds, and then some short duration high yield. That's sort of a little bit of a cocktail mix, different blends of an allocation to get to 1% yield, okay, for, let's say, a 1 to 2 year duration. The best part, even though it was a very painful thing for all of us to go through and experience, was the backup in rates has really allowed investors to take a look at many different things now and say, this is an opportunity to really readjust our allocation to the fixed income markets, right? And so cash was something that for years, you could almost say maybe close to a decade, we have not seen a 5% treasury in close to maybe 10 years. And so that opportunistically is in front of us. So clearly, being weighted to some extent on the front end of the curve, whether it be taxables or municipals, is an advantageous thing. You're getting a very good carry of yield, a really good higher yield than you're getting on the long end. So why do I need to go out and take unnecessary risk from a maturity standpoint in ladder maturities? That's a perfectly understandable and acceptable thought process. What we have to think about, though, is this, is the timing of the pivot and the change in rates will happen quickly, and it will probably happen at some point over the course of this year. So we do want to think about allocating appropriately to some of those longer dated maturities, let's say in the taxable space, and I'll pivot to munis in a second here. But it doesn't have to be a lot, but you want to lock in. When you look at the taxable market, you have investment grade corporate bonds yielding, you know, upwards of 5 to 6%. They're at their 10-year averages of yields. And so the best thing that I would say is begin to think about your portfolio in fixed income in a barbell approach, right? Similar to that weight we look at, you know, we lift in the gym, is I have a weighting of maturity in assets under management under the very, very short part of the curve. But I also want to take advantage of parts of the curve that if it moves quickly and this bond market rallies quickly, we don't want to have that fear of missing out trade to say, I wish I could have rewound this tape, if you will, and go back and lock in some of those slightly longer maturities. By no means are we saying, you know, 20 or 30 years. On the taxable side, you can go out 3 to 5 to 10 years and get a really high yield. And so you provide yourself with that. You've got some money locked in on the longer part in case the bond market rallies, but you also have a lot of flexibility on the short part of the curve. On the muni side, if I shift over to that ledger, what I would say is probably a bit of the same. The muni market is definitely a lagging market to the treasuries or investment grade corporate market. And that's really because, you know, munis are very much a domesticated market. And it is a $4 trillion market, but compared to treasuries or corporates, they're not nearly as large. Very much yields are very much dependent upon what type of supply do we see in the marketplace, coupled with obviously demand from investors. The muni market very rarely inverts. And you mentioned that on the taxable market, that, you know, the taxable treasury market is very much inverted. Muni market very rarely inverts, but we are inverted now. Okay. That's something, again, you don't really see happen. And so when I look at the market and our team looks at the muni market right now, where we currently see value is on the very front end of the curve, anywhere from, you know, 0 to 2 or 3 years. And then it's really more on the back end of the maturity spectrum, anywhere from 12 years out on the curve. That middle part that I leave out, that intermediate part of the curve, let's just say for argument's sake, between 3 and 12 years, it's extremely overbought, right? There, we have not gotten back in yield, even though we've had a fairly good pronounced back up in February, you know, along with the treasury market. The muni market still is overbought there. And so I think that patience, as we wait for a greater amount of supply to enter into the muni market, and we're expecting that to happen probably in the next month or so, is that that market, when we get a greater amount of supply, that we would like to see rates pull back a little bit. And where you would probably see that pullback in rates is that part of the curve that we're currently trying to avoid a little bit, or at least lighten up, which is that 3 to, let's say, 12 or 13 year area. Once we get that supply, the rates do normalize, I would then be looking at the muni market and saying, this could be a great, great opportunity to reinvest. If we get close to, John, the levels that we saw during the peak of rates in 22, which is really, you know, late October, early November, that's when muni rates peaked. And, you know, when you look at an asset class where you can get taxable equivalent yields of anywhere from 6 to 8%, that's where we were back in late October, November. I was telling clients, look, if that's the worst bond, if I'm putting a municipal bond in my portfolio that has a taxable equivalent yield of anywhere from 6 to 8%, and that's the worst bond in my portfolio, I'll take it. And we have to remind ourselves where we were, you know, a year ago. And I think the amazing thing is this, is that we have been fearful of inflation for such a long time, John, that we hit 9% inflation. And the highest we got on corporates was really 6.5% yields. And the highest we got on munis was 4.75% on investment grade, you know, yields. And so, again, if we get a little bit higher from here, it probably won't last that long.
Just to drive home that point, what we're talking about, the yield curve, should you buy a 20-year, a 10-year, a 1-year? You know, a guy used to tell a story around here as an older advisor. 1981, I think he said that he had a nice couple sitting across from him, and he told him, you know, you ought to buy this 14% 30-year United States Treasury non-callable. The little old gal looked at him and said, what are you, stupid? The money market pays 16%. And that's where they stayed. But the reality, in hindsight, the right move would be a 30-year non-callable treasury at 14%.
Absolutely.
I'm not calling for a 30-year now, but the point is, you know, right now everything says, geez, why would I do anything other than 6 months? But as we discuss this going forward, we'll talk more about when is the right time. We don't know yet, but filtering some money a little longer on the curve.
You need to. Your point is great. And that's what I mentioned earlier in my comments was, you know, barbelling, right? Because we don't know when this will turn, right? No one really does, okay? But there's something called reinvestment risk, right? And that risk is that, yes, buying that one-year bond is great right now, but in a year from now, if you have to reinvest in that same maturity and it's 2%, when you could have locked in, to your point, which is very eloquently put, that longer-term bond where they cannot take it away from you for an extended period of time, that is something that we as investors, as we enter into the, you know, our older ages of investing and we're planning for and preparing or in our retirement ages, is that locked in amount of income that we can continue to count on for an extended period of time to fund homes, second homes, boats, trips, you name it, healthcare. That's an extremely important thing that we need to keep mind of, and that we're in a market of, again, I kind of try to lay it out loosely here, but we can't get necessarily greedy, right? We passed 9% inflation, and we never saw rates go to the levels of which we had witnessed, and you mentioned on that 13% treasury bond. And so we may not get there, and we probably won't. So plan accordingly, and when the opportunity does exist, you know, it's okay to move some more of those chips, if you will, to the center table and lock in some of those long-term yields.
We're running a little short on time, so we're going to have to move along. But yeah, we don't want to end this call without talking about the debt ceiling, kind of going a little bit different direction. But could you kind of give us your thoughts on this debt ceiling issue that we're going to be facing here shortly?
Yeah, the debt ceiling is a very interesting, you know, topic to talk about. What the debt ceiling is unfortunately, we love to spend in this country, and we've hit our constitutional limits once again. And so if you know, for those listeners, if you haven't, you know, sort of read about it more in the popular press or seen it on TV, this is not something new to this country. I think since World War II, Congress has raised the debt limit 78 times and suspended it 5 other times, right? So again, nothing new here, but unfortunately, we do keep increasing this debt limit. The current debt limit right now is $31.4 trillion, I think, right? And that was reached in January. So what happened was Secretary Janet Yellen, you know, went to the Commerce Committee and said, all right, we have extraordinary measures. We need to provide additional leeway for the Treasury. And so there's what's called the X date out there, and that is the X date in which we're factoring will be anywhere from, let's say, early June to August. And what we're going to see here is a tremendous amount of discussions between from our political constituents in Washington. One party saying it should be extended, the other party saying it shouldn't be. We need to cut costs. We've been down this road before. This time, I think, could just be a bit more of a challenge. We're not anticipating at UBS, nor are any of our constituents on the street expecting a default here, but there's going to be a lot of noise around this. I would probably say that it will get done, right? We have to get this done. But the noise surrounding this, John, is going to be like a really bad divorce, right? And so if I were to say worst case scenario is, yeah, maybe there's a temporary delay of payment on some of those securities that have maturities around the August, September, October timeframe. Temporary delay would not really mean a default. But again, we're just being, you know, we're trying to be extremely mindful across our portfolios where, quite frankly, we're just avoiding those maturities. Again, not for fear of default. We are expecting yields to spike in those particular maturities just because of that anticipated or a little bit higher heightened risk that investors would take on by owning those particular maturities. But across our portfolios, we're just temporarily just avoiding that time frame where those discussions could get quite a bit more heated and will be much more in the focus of us as investors across this country. So,
you know, Anthony, we have a lot of money in the money markets right now. Do you think this might provide us the opportunity to stretch that maturity out on here? And then maybe touch on the municipal funds that have bonds in them. We find that the people in those municipal bond funds, especially the no-load funds out there, they're able to bail out real quick. And I think that's where you guys in the separately managed accounts buy most of your money is when they're selling, buy most of your bonds. But do you think there's going to be an opportunity where the media just, because this could go over time. I mean, I think when Clinton was president and Newt was the speaker, I think it went like 16 days. I could be wrong on that, but it went a while. And then I remember there were opportunities because people panicked and sold. Yeah. And so with the belief that things are going to get better someday, what do you think? Is there going to be some opportunity? Maybe you can contrast the mutual funds versus what we do on the ESMAs.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, you know, is when, you know, the difference between SMAs and funds is, again, your securities are completely separate, right? And so the panic and fear that people have when these issues arise, whether it be election time, whether it be financial crisis, whether it be debt ceiling, that's when people just get a little nervous and anxious and they say, get me out of the marketplace. And typically what happens is the forced liquidations happen within the ETFs and mutual funds. Why? Because it's very simple to do. From an investor standpoint, you sell one asset class, just like an equity, and you're out, right? And it's a lot easier for those people to do rather than selling a list of their individual bond securities. And so what happens is the funds that get all those redemptions requests go into a market where many other funds like themselves have hundreds of millions or billions of dollars for sale at the same time. When the investor has the ability in the separately managed account to speak to, you know, financial advisors like, you know, like yourself, to then reach out to our team to say, sit tight, we've done our research on this, we're going to get past this. Okay, then the conversation pivots to, should I be looking to add in here, right? And that's the smart investor, is when we feel that we have conviction, whether it be most importantly from a credit standpoint, and then from a risk standpoint, as far as yields, is, yeah, those might be the best opportunities. And if you look back over history, they probably have chosen to be the best opportunities to leg in or invest more aggressively in the marketplace, because you're taking advantage of the other person not being informed as to what is truly happening in the broader marketplace. That's where the smart money lies, right? That's where you're able to take advantage of that. So, yeah, we do, unfortunately, like to take advantage of when people are making mistakes. There's an old saying, when your enemy is making a mistake, don't interrupt them. Yeah, we're kind of doing that a little bit here, John, which is that's when we do and we're able to buy bonds really cheap. We're able to get our clients into securities at very good entry prices. And at the end of the day, those tend to be, in some cases, some of the best performing bonds within their portfolio. So, yeah, that's where I really feel strongly that the separately managed account gives, you know, clients the ability to be much more prescriptive and precise in what they wanted to do in moving the directive of, you know, into the more tumultuous times within the market environment.
Yeah, I just, one last point on that. The mutual fund manager has 2 days to get the money to the investor who has just sold. And so he doesn't have time to play around. He has to dump the bonds. And that's where I'm talking about the opportunity lies. And I think that the person who gets into a mutual fund and stays put, and he sees that this debt ceiling will be settled, it doesn't matter. He's in a pool with the other investors at Vanguard or Fidelity or wherever. It's easy to get out, just open your computer and hit a button. So you're stuck with them. We're an SMA. We've kind of morphed into that. And it took me a long time because of what I said earlier. I never had a need for it. I just buy the insured bonds. But anyway, they have to dump them. You guys get an opportunity to buy because we slowed the people getting out. We know it'll be fixed.
Yep.
Enough said on that, but I think that's the key point. They have 2 days.
And Anthony, I know we're getting into the later innings of this call. Pardon the pun, but it is baseball season, spring training down here.
It is, yeah.
But as we wrap this call up, any final thoughts before we close out our call?
I would just say, you know, from a credit standpoint, I think that, you know, what we are doing here and being cautious is, as you go into recessionary cycles, people definitely will continue and probably should be, rightfully so, just being mindful of credit. I don't think that whether we're looking in the taxable fixed income space or the municipal fixed income space, what we're doing is being mindful and being very conservative, as we most of the time are. And just we're, I'd say, recessionary proofing our portfolios. The markets appear to be handling inflation well. You know, you can see what's happening in the equity markets that, yeah, earnings are off. It hasn't been a banner year, but now for the most part, they're doing okay. And the same thing holds true on the muni side. But we don't feel right now that we are and our clients are getting compensated to move down in credit quality, right? And so I would just continue to say that, you know, we're extremely mindful of credit. Credit doesn't seem to be a concern to us right now across all of our fixed income. But again, we're being very conservative because at some point, those could be opportunities to where we can pick up additional yield and alpha within our portfolios at a later date, just not right now. So just touch upon credit for a minute.
Okay. Well, Anthony, we really appreciate your time with us today. And as everyone knows, that there is a recording of this on our website. And also you can subscribe on iTunes, on our podcast, the Patika Wealth Management Group podcast. So Anthony, thanks again for your time and I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. Stay well and have a great one.
All right. Take care.
All right.